Mr. Andy Gorns, how are you? Oh, it's early, isn't it? It's Andy Tai-Tai.
Andy just woke up. These are the first words I've spoken.
Wow, man. I don't know if it's better to do this first thing in the morning or like end of the day.
Well, no, definitely end of the day. Your vocal cords are lubricated. It's definitely the end of the day.
Have you had a fancy coffee yet?
I have. But my wife bought a new brand of coffee different from what we usually have. And no bueno for me. Not strong enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah, too mild.
Minnesota mud is what my wife calls some of the coffee that I buy.
Well, it would probably go quite well in your big gulp cup that you use.
And I have no big gulp today. But I was going to say, it's going to be pretty awkward doing today's podcast, considering I'm not talking to you. And so it's going to be a pretty one-way dialogue, you know, considering the whole Last Rasp podcast debauchery from last week.
Listen, so we want to get into that, do we? Because I'm not talking to you because you edited me on the last one and made me sound like a complete tit.
That's called, isn't that called artistic license?
No, that's called being a dickhead.
Is it time to roll the intro?
Welcome to Kerman Canyon. Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Another podcast getting started. All good.
Lots to get through today.
I know. It's been quite an exciting week, hasn't it? For me personally, getting the 996 back on the road. But quite a lot to talk about from the old Porsche world. And we've got a video of the week. Video of the week.
Kerman Canyon. Video of the week.
Should we start with that this time?
Oh, really?
Yeah, let's do it, because you know I will have already edited in my stupid voiceover. Let's do video of the week first.
Okay. Yeah, let's do video of the week.
What was it? We didn't do one.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Do you know what? Oh. I got to tell you, I haven't watched a lot of content this week, but video of the week can actually lead me directly what is point one in the show notes, and that is your 996 video. I've got to say, really good, man. Like some beautiful shots, beautiful drone imagery. It was mega. I was super, super impressed.
Coming from you, in all sincerity, that means an awful lot to me.
It wasn't insincerity. There was no sincerity. I was just on the spot and had to think quick. It was sincere. Really lovely combination of the drone footage and then, you know, some lovely tracking shots. And yeah, I loved it, mate. Well done.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, this one I've been sort of procrastinating over for a couple of weeks. I've had the car back, you know, for a couple of weeks and I've been driving it. And there were quite a few days where it was raining. And at one point I thought I just wasn't going to make this video. I was building it up too much in my head. But, you know, I found that sort of perfect combination of weather and time of day and not having any work or kids around me. And I just thought, let's just get out there and do it. Shot it all in about an hour.
And is that sort of indicative of the driving you do on the weekend? You'll just find an empty estate where houses are being built and just terrorize it Fast and the Furious style?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, you know, it's funny you should mention that because I do often think about one of the opening sequences in Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift, yeah, yeah, that's what I was, exactly. I was going to say that, but I thought it was too much of a deep cut, so I thought, no, I won't
mention
it.
No, you're Tokyo absolutely Drift. Right. No, one of the benefits of where I live is there's quite a lot of new construction. Not only are there lots of beautifully brand new paved roads
to
rag around on, there are loads of dumpsters that you can just chuck rubbish in.
Or bodies.
Exactly, or bodies. So I spend a lot of time fly tipping. But no, it's good. And I kind of wanted to do a cityscape actually this time. And I found a couple of really cool locations in downtown Minneapolis. But every time I left the house, I got halfway downtown and it started raining. So I just turned around and was forget it. Just, I mean, it's that time of year, I guess.
What are the rules putting a drone up around the city in downtown Minneapolis?
Well,
if you don't get caught, it's fine.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, I mean, so before I launch the drone in a populated area, I'll usually check the DJI fly map.
Yeah.
It's really accurate. It gives you loads of info about restricted and what's not. And the other thing I like about the app is that because it knows where you are, if you're in a restricted zone, it won't let you take off.
Yeah, perfect. It's great, isn't it?
Unless you sign, you know, the waiver and say, I understand that I'm doing something naughty. Just let me fly it anyway. So it's actually pretty intuitive. You know, I've never really gotten myself into trouble. And if you apply common sense, like I do like flying the drone around in the city, but FAA guidelines say that you shouldn't be flying it directly over a road. Or directly over populations. Yeah. So when you see me taking photos of the city and cars driving by, directly below the drone will be, you know, an empty car park. A dumpster. but you know what? Speaking of drone footage, so I posted my 996 video on all the usual places like Instagram and some of the Facebook groups that I'm a member of. After last week, you know, talking about Porsche Club of America and
The
Porsche clubs generally and attitudes. I got, not only did I get an automated system message, I got a handwritten message or a hand type message from Nord Stern saying your video has been rejected because we don't like videos with unauthorized drone use. So they refused to put my video up on their Facebook page because of, quote, unauthorized drone use.
Really?
Yeah, and it's not unauthorized. It was perfectly legal. I wasn't operating the car. It wasn't in a commercial area. What is unauthorized drone usage? Now, to be fair, they did tell me at the Porsche event in Indianapolis that they don't like them at PCA events because they don't want people flying drones.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I thought that. That's understandable.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I think that's totally fair enough. But my own video shot in a rural area. I mean, come on, guys. It's just lame.
That was such a great chat with Sean last week. I've had a lot of positive feedback about that, and just what a super inspiring dude, right? Like so passionate.
Yeah, so good. And I've seen at least half a dozen people respond to the Curb and Canyon post saying, "Hey, great job, lads! The Last Rush podcast was fantastic this week." I've had a few giggles.
So how goes the 996 anyway? Because you've obviously been out driving it plenty. It looks amazing. We do need to talk ride height, though. That safari stance has to go. But it looks like you're actually having a blast.
Oh, I am. It's really enjoyable. And especially since I put the seat extender rails in. And the GT3 console delete has just changed the interior. It's perfect. I can man spread all I want in that car. Just, you know, fantastic. But it's good enough to drive on the local roads and a little bit of highway, but I am going to need to do a bit more maintenance before I go to the Rocky Mountains. I've got to do the control arms. It's quite obvious that they need replacing. And there are a couple of other, like, few little things like that. I also need to do the brakes. I know the brakes perform differently on the 996 as they did to the 7 and the 991, but I do have the brake wear warning light and
right.
ABS failure warning light.
Oh, welcome to the 964 world.
Is that there as well?
Oh, like I always have the ABS light on. Well, not at the moment I don't, but you remember I went through the thing and we thought it was just a lack of brake fluid, and I was quite embarrassed on this very pod. But actually it's not. It is a recurring issue. But yeah, so it's very, very common on a 964. I didn't know there was a 996 issue. There you go.
Well, it's a James McGrath 996 issue.
Yes, so yes. At least
I'm going to go try and get that fixed.
The special edition. So
yeah, a little bit of maintenance before I go on the road. But it's like 5-6 weeks away now. I'm really excited.
That's enough time. That's enough time to pull those things together, get it sorted.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, there's one thing that's grossing me out a little bit at the moment, which is the Alcantara lined roof.
Yeah.
In the 996, they're notorious for sagging. And the roof itself, thankfully, is okay, but the sunroof is sagging. So as I'm driving, I've just got that constant sort of little bit of pressure on my head.
Touching like, your little tin quiff there. Now, do you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Nothing good has ever been described as saggy, has it?
Do you know what I mean? Right, exactly, exactly.
Oh, it was so great. It was saggy, just perfect.
So I need to get that fixed somehow. I didn't notice, actually, the body shop took off the sunroof to paint it when they painted the car.
Yeah.
So maybe it was something that happened then when they took it out and stuff. But I need to fix that because that's absolutely doing my head in.
Yes. Yes.
But other than that, it's good. It's looking great. I've had a couple of offers on it actually, which is quite nice.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah, I had a couple of people on Instagram reach out, and a couple of people through my website just reach out directly.
They know it's yours, right? Like.
I have said to them, you know, it's Ginger, it's not Singer. Yeah. And they were like, oh yeah, all right, fair enough.
Ginger. Oh, we're gonna make this happen. I can see the logo.
Yeah, exactly. Can you see it like in the Singer style, but it says Ginger?
Yeah,
I would love that.
100%. And instead of everything is important, it just says everything is carbon.
Yeah. one can dream, but yeah, no, that's it. And how's the 964? Any videos in the pipeline?
Not with the 964, but some other videos coming up. I did a drive on the weekend with the 964, and I think probably belted it as hard as I ever have. Driving, really? There's this road. It's a bit of a distance from us. It's a little bit of a drive to get to, but it's quite renowned. It's super tight, super twisty, super technical, and it goes for, you're probably driving it for half an hour. And I really wrung the car's neck. It was unbelievable. It's so incredible what that car can do. But actually, do you know what? I wanted to mention this. I didn't put it in the notes. I've got a bit of an update. Do you recall a few weeks back, in fact, a good little while back, you and I said we were going to reach out to Porsche and see if we could get press cars?
Yeah. Yeah.
I reached out to Porsche.
No, I
did, dude, and do you know what? And I did it last week, and I sent them the 997 video that I'd just done, and I thought this is the moment to do it. Now, to be fair, I did think to myself afterwards, Porsche play a really big role in the Australian Formula One Grand Prix, so it was probably not the ideal time. I'm sure they were really, really busy, but they came back to me this week. Let me tell you the response. Dear Andy, thank you for reaching out. Awesome. Great to see your passion about Porsche. Amazing. Fantastic. I'm afraid we have an extremely small fleet and guidelines set by head office in Germany as to who we can loan our cars out to. As such, I can't offer you a press car. But there's a silver lining here. Should your channel grow to a significant size, then in brackets, 100,000 plus subscribers, please feel free to touch base again. So I am now on a highly driven campaign to bring my subscriber base from its current 3,800 stratospheric heights to 100,000. So if you are listening to this and you don't subscribe to the Last Rasp YouTube channel, I'm talking to you. It's just you, it's me, and 99,000 other people, we are going to get me this damn, get me access to a press car.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. I mean, you got a response. That's really cool.
That's great. Not even Chris Harris has 100,000 subscribers.
Nick Murray does. He just hit 200,000.
Yeah, Nick Murray. It's just because he started early. That's it. They're all bots, Russian bots.
I think he also uses his two cute dogs, you know, really well.
Yeah,
I think,
he's totally buying those subscribers.
Yeah, 80% of that subscriber base are French bulldog aficionados, and then the rest is Porsche.
Yeah, 100%. And I've seen footage of him. He actually flies around in a light aircraft dropping pamphlets. He's done all sorts of stuff to get those.
that actually wouldn't surprise me.
No. But you know what? I can't pile on to Nick Murray. I've never spoken to the guy. I know you and him have got your thing. I can't join that. That's completely unfair. I tell you what,
he's so nice. He is good.
Great guy. So we had the Australian Formula One Grand Prix here last weekend, and it's the first time it's happened in 3 years because of the pandemic. I went along on Friday, so it had the largest turnout of any sporting event in the history of this country. Over 400,000 people across the 4 days.
Really?
Yeah, it was amazing, man. So you've got Drive to Survive's massively driven and expanded the audience base of Formula One as a marketing exercise. That show's been incredibly effective. And, you know, Melburnians just wanted to be out and doing something. And it was amazing. So I went on the Friday. I went on the Friday, and even the Friday crowds were unbelievable. And so, you know, watching the Formula One cars is great, but of course you also get Carrera Cup. And dude, watching these new 992 Cup cars was unreal. The racing was so tight. They're so fast. They sound so good. And then the best part was you could actually then walk around the pits, which was just ace. And I took my dad, and I said to him at one point, I said, I wonder where – you got 30 cars in the cup car field. They're clearly not using the same pits as the F1 crews. So, you know, where are they? Well, the pits are these temporary kind of marquee set up in the paddock. And you could just walk over to them, and then Porsche had a big display. There was a Python green GT4 there that really, really grabbed my attention. But – so cool to walk around the pits and see all these cup cars.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I didn't really get the excitement about the track and racing until I went to the Indianapolis Speedway this year to see the Porsche events, and they were all 992 and 991 cup cars racing that weekend. And within seconds of just sitting there and watching them hoon it round, I was like, okay, I get it. Yeah. I get it. And then I walked down, and similar, they allowed us to walk in the stalls where the cars are being prepped, you know, behind the pits and gasoline alley, I think it was called. And it was just sensational. Just absolutely sensational looking at all the different cars. Formula One's exciting though. I have to admit, I haven't really followed much of Formula One since, the Michael Schumacher, Dennis Villeneuve days. I mean, we're talking 20 years, which is like when I was at university and had nothing better to do on a Saturday than watch F1 with my mates.
Was Dennis the slightly lesser known cousin of Jacques Villeneuve who drove against Michael Schumacher?
Dennis Villeneuve is the Hollywood director. Obviously, I'm out of the picture.
You son of a bitch. You're right. I tell you what.
Oh, my God. Anyway, so old Dennis's brother, Jack, was in it. but I used to be fixed to it. You know, I used to watch it all the time. And then quite honestly, in the past 10, 15 years, coincidentally, since moving to the States, I haven't really followed it very much. But the rumors, or the confirmed rumors potentially, about Porsche And Audi as well, maybe. Porsche and Audi, the Volkswagen group, getting into F1. That's going to bring me back to watching it. Like, just, I cannot wait if that happens. It's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's, do you know what's interesting is I've been doing some reading on this and watching some things on YouTube. There is so much commentary kind of below the videos and the like. And this was reported on Sky Sports. There's a bunch of different places actually where they're talking about it and the race on YouTube. But so much commentary below is, yeah, this has been rumored since I started watching F1 in 98. I'll believe it when I see it, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah. But so the way it's looking at the moment, and again, this is somewhat rumor and hearsay, is that Porsche are looking to go into a collaborative project with Red Bull. So they would become some sort of part engine supplier for Red Bull. And it turns out actually that as recently as 2018, Porsche actually had an F1 engine developed, a prototype, full V6 engine being dyno tested with the energy recovery system. So they've been somewhat down the path for a long time. The thinking though is that Audi will do something entirely different. There was talk about them potentially partnering with McLaren, but it's potentially two completely different things. So it'll be interesting to see. I have two concerns. One, if Porsche becomes somehow the engine supplier for Red Bull, I've got a problem with that because so at the Grand Prix on the weekend, Max Verstappen's car broke down and I was just laughing, saying couldn't happen to a better guy. I'm not a big fan of Max. And so if my least favorite driver is driving in with my favorite engine, how am I going to reconcile that? so that's going to be a problem for me. But my one worry is that, you know the kind of budgets that are involved in F1, right? Now, if Volkswagen Audi Group are pushing in, both Porsche and Audi going in, there has to be therefore a budgetary impact with respect to Porsche's other motorsport programs, and could we therefore see them pulling out of endurance racing or some of these other categories for which I think they are better suited, because the brand that endurance racing heritage to me is the stuff that gets me excited about the brand, not their link that they had with F1, for example, in the 80s. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out if it happens. They're talking about it for 2025, I think it is. Who knows? Very interesting.
You see, I had a similar concern, but it was bigger picture than that. It wasn't that any sort of budget challenges they run into would affect their racing efforts. Considering just like 20, 25 years ago, we were talking about potentially Porsche going bust, and the Cayenne and the Boxster and the first generation 996 saved the company. My first thought was, what about the company? I mean, would it put the broader company at risk financially? I mean, like you say, given the budgets involved in F1, and it's a high stakes table.
It is. Well, and so, according to the race, the YouTube channel, Audi's re-entry into Le Mans, into the endurance racing at Le Mans, has already been scrapped beyond, I think, 2026 because of the need to redirect funds to F1. So, look, I don't think, bigger picture, I think the governance of that organization is such that they're not going to put the business at risk entirely for a form of motorsport. I just think there's too many checks and balances in place for that to happen. But if it does impact on, I love watching Porsche going endurance racing. I love seeing 911s on the racetrack. That stuff excites me. And yeah, if it prevented that, then I think that would be to the detriment of the sport.
Do you think it's too much of a leap to think that Porsche's involvement in F1 would only start when F1 goes fully electric? When F1 goes fully electric?
Oh, who knows? I mean, certainly at this stage, you know, based on the rumors, at least, it's not going to be a fully electric power plant at that point. There will be some differences, I think, from what I've read. But, yeah, look, maybe. I think, you know, F1 is really driving efforts around sustainability. I don't know what will happen in terms of electrification of that category, though, if that's the end game for F1. I don't know. It was interesting, actually, because I hadn't been to an F1 race since the 90s. And the morning of the race, I took myself to a pharmacy drugstore and bought some earplugs, thinking, you know, back in the old V12 turbo days and the like, the sound of those F1 cars was, you know, literally painful to listen to. Whereas these V6 hybrid engines that they're running now, I didn't put earplugs in the whole day. It was completely fine. They actually sound really good. Yeah, they sound great. Yeah. But I mean, the cup cars were louder. The cup cars were louder.
Yeah. Well, so when was it? It was like 6 months ago that Porsche announced their Mission R
car,
which is their concept car, but for the future of motor racing.
Yep.
Don't you think that's a bit of a coincidence that we're hearing F1 rumors and they're out there right now prototyping a parallel race car?
Maybe
they didn't call it Mission F. You know,
well, because look at you as you say Mission F, he's giggling like a 14-year-old. That's why they didn't call it Mission F.
Exactly, but you know, Mission R. I mean, shit, it looks like a race car. I bet you would be absolutely phenomenal to drive, given that it's like 1,100 horsepower or something bonkers.
Yeah.
They're dabbling.
You know, I stood there at the pits at the Grand Prix looking at these cars, and I turned to my dad and I said, you know, the way that looks, I think I could drive it. Because, you know, the way the F1 cars look, I just figure I couldn't even get one of those cars to move. You know, the hand clutch, ridiculous steering wheels. You know, the cup cars still look like a car. And do you know, I took a photo of this and put it on my story. I think it was one of the greatest little details I saw all weekend. You know, when you see old photos of 911s racing in, you know, Targa Florio or, you know, whatever races back in the 60s and 70s, you'll oftentimes see the headlights will have tape across them in an X shape.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cup cars have the headlights are frosted, with the clear bit being in the shape of an X. So it's this lovely little nod to the race cars of the past. And I just saw that and I thought, oh, that is so cool, because that's really inside baseball stuff, right? And you can barely see it. It's really subtle, but it is. It's a lovely little 1% touch. I just thought it was brilliant, really, really brilliant.
So for the Bobby Basics out there, like my good self, what makes a cup car, apart from the fact that it, you know, races? There are quite a few things. The interior is stripped out. A lot of them, you know, are essentially just shells of what you can buy from the shop floor.
Oh yeah, I mean, thanks for the question without notice. First of all, loving you, leaning on my expertise in this space as I madly Google. Look, certainly visually, there are some obvious differences. Stripped out interior, cage, Actually, in Australia, what's interesting is that all the cars are left-hand drive, even though we're a right-hand drive market. But I assume all of the cup cars just roll off a production line in Germany anyway to go racing all around the world. Obviously, the control setup is different. The dash steering wheel is a high-tech affair covered in all sorts of switch gears and the like, which I assume is you know, all sorts of things like brake bias and all that kind of stuff. Maybe someone will comment on YouTube, but on Instagram, sorry. But I don't know. They're big, they're fast, they've got a shit ton of aero on them, they're stripped out, they sound batshit crazy. And do you know, I think, you know, to your point about not getting the racing thing until you see it, I liken it to, you know how when you, I don't know if you do this, right? But if I'm driving along the freeway and I see a Porsche, a 911, a Cayman, doesn't matter what it is, I'll weave through traffic, I'll do dangerous things so that I can catch up to it and drive just behind it in another lane, just looking at it, right? Because we see them all the time parked on the street or in the dealership. There's something about seeing them in motion which just elevates the design, because they're those cars that look fast standing still, but once they're going, that's when they look their best. And so to see them come past you as fast as it is possible for them to go, and surrounded by others doing the same thing. And we were positioned on the circuit between turns 9 and 10, and there's this really quick little direction change there. And to see the way these cup cars would switch from a left-hander into the right-hander, it was just epic, epic, epic. It couldn't have been better. It was a great time. It was a good time.
It got me excited about the next Porsche Together Festival this year. If they go back to the Speedway, one of the things that still sort of remains really fresh in my memory is the sound of those cup cars.
Oh, yeah.
They sounded like Porsches, but they were on a just completely different level.
Yes. And
I'd humbly say that my sole performance setup on my 991 was really epic sounding.
Yeah.
But that was just like next level.
Oh, yeah.
Times 10.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. And just howling down the straight past the main stand.
Yeah.
Oh, what a rush.
Yeah.
I can still hear it ringing in my ears. It's just so good.
Yeah, it is. It's unreal. I definitely want to see more motor racing. Even some historic stuff, even seeing that stuff, I absolutely love. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
I have to say, and I don't want to start a massive big argument here with my American subscriber base, but the one type of racing that I've just never really figured out and understood the thrill about is NASCAR, where it's just a bunch of stock cars driving around in a very tight circle. I mean, don't get me wrong, Talladega Nights, one of my favorite movies, hilarious, but I just don't get it.
Well, so we have here the dominant motorsport category here is a category called V8 supercars, which is basically touring car racing. It started life. It was all sorts of different manufacturers were in it, bigger cars, smaller cars, all sorts of stuff. It fundamentally became then a two manufacturer category, so Holden, GM, and versus Ford, and you know, families in this country are defined by whether they're a Holden family or a Ford family, if you follow motorsport. Yeah, and these cars, you'd see it at the F1, and in fact, there's some great footage of Sergio Perez driving one of the V8 supercars, which was excellent. And that category of racing is similar to NASCAR in that I guess you could call them stock cars, but they're racing on circuits like Bathurst. They raced at Albert Park on the weekend. And actually, I've got to say, the V8 supercar racing, I've not really tuned into it all that much over the last 5 to 10 years. But on track, it was brilliant. Because those guys go wheel to wheel. They're not afraid to bang doors. And the cars sound ace because they're V8s. They're probably the best sounding car I heard all weekend, to be fair. I totally get that kind of racing. I love it. And you know, I think even with NASCAR, I think it's really easy to say, oh, they're just driving around in circles. How hard could it be? But I reckon to hold a car on the edge of adhesion the way they need to around those curves, there's clearly something in it. There's clearly a mega skill in it.
I don't doubt the skill level.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I guess maybe it's the way some people look at golf and think, you know, you're just knocking a little ball around a field. Where's the thrill?
Yeah.
And actually, if you're into it, you get it. You understand it.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. So on the weekend, I mentioned before I went for a drive. A buddy of mine came along who doesn't come on many drives with me. He messaged me, said, listen, can my pal Will come along? I said, yeah, of course. So this guy, Will, rolls up. I've met Will once before, lovely guy, and he's got a 992 GT3.
Oh, I don't like Will.
Yeah.
No, I don't like Will.
No. That's understandable.
You've got a 992 GT3.
Yeah, like I've never seen one in the dealership. I think I glanced at one driving past me on the freeway, but suddenly here is this car waiting to go on a drive with us. And
no.
He has done such a great job with the spec on this car. It's Gentian blue, which I've been on the configurator nice. Plenty and often gone with Gentian blue because I think it's a glorious color with the neodyne wheels. So they're the kind of bronze gold, and in real life they look unbelievable. They just look glorious. It's a wing, so it's not a Touring. But, you know, I was reminded of when the 991 manual GT3 came out and Henry Catchpole, who you know I'm a fan of, did a review on it. And I remember in the review he said, so the big question a lot of people have is wing or no wing. Honestly, when you're driving the car, you don't care. You don't care. It's just, you know, it's just amazing either way. So, yeah, wing, but importantly, manual transmission.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as a manual. And
yeah, I really don't like Will. I should have so much respect for him for going manual with a GT3 because let's face it, that's the best.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous right now. If you see him, will you just tell him I don't like
him? Yeah, I'll kick him in the nuts for you. but it was so unreal. And actually, so here's the thing. I got to sit in it and he's got the 18-way sports seats, so not the buckets.
Yeah.
I was amazed. They look beautiful, but also he said, oh, I've got them set with kind of the most side bolster support. I was shocked by how comfortable they were, but also how much support there was. You know, I thought belting through the twisties in this would be, you'd feel completely locked in. And the whole interior, it's amazing. I always thought, you know, the 991 interior was a really great place to be. The way this 992 GT3 interior just seems to shrink around you, it's like putting on a glove. And, oh, man, just an awesome place to be.
Wait, hang on, hold up. The pennies just dropped. Did you get to drive this thing?
No, no, I didn't get to drive it, but I got to sit in it.
Okay.
I was like a 9-year-old kid saying, excuse me, mister, can I sit in your car? So I was, as we got
Mr.
to this,
Will.
As we got to this, you imagine me like 4 foot tall, sort of pulling on his sleeve. Oh, as we got to the road that I was talking about before, this twisty road, I strategically positioned myself behind him. I thought I want to A, try and keep up with this car, and B, just look at it on the road. And so two things happened. First of all, the presence of this car, I can't adequately say how good this car looked and how much presence.
Really?
Oh, dude, I've 992 for me has been a car that's been a bit of a slow burn. I didn't love it when it first came out, but it's really grown on me. And then seeing it like this with these incredible filled arches with those amazing wheels chasing it from behind, its presence on the road was insane. The sound of it, unbelievable. Like just
really,
oh, dude. Unbelievable. But it was really interesting because when we got to this the twisties, there came a point where I was really worried. I wanted to be behind him so that I didn't hold him up, but in the end I had to get past him and was able to pull away from him. And that's not in any way reflective of driving talent or anything like that, but the road was quite tight. And you could just see that the car on that particular piece of road was too big and that it was a handful. And I remember driving my 991 on that road and thinking the exact same thing. And I spoke with him later on and he said, you don't get to really lean on the horsepower of the car on this road because the corners are so tight. So it was kind of an interesting one where, you know, I always think that every iteration Porsche releases is a better car than previously, which it always is, right?
Yeah.
but that that means that in every situation, it will be the best tool for the job. But actually on that one little particular stretch of road, it's one example out of 20, right? But on that one little stretch of road, my little 964 with its kind of small body and agility was actually a better car for that piece of road. And it also demonstrated, I think, the benefits of, you know, something you're a big fan of, which is modification. Because I think because my 964 is really well set up, it meant, you know, I can throw that car through corners. Same with, you know, my buddy Fraz was in his 996 turbo and that thing's dialed in. And same thing, he was hammering it. My buddy Anthony in his 997, same again. It just showed how important setup is. And that, you know, regardless of the age of your car, the status of your car, if you get the setup right, paying particular attention to the drivability setup, the suspension and the like, you can have a highly capable car.
Yeah, totally. I want to ask about the looks. What did you think of the nostrils? Because I've, as you know, great the reviews of that car have been, from a style point of view, I've heard people have had, like, you know, sort of mixed feelings about the nostrils on the front. I think they look good, but in the flesh?
Like so many things, I've looked at the pictures of them, watched the reviews, watched the videos and the like, and thought, I'm not so sure about the nostrils, but hey, if having them meant having a GT3, I'll live with it, right? But in real life, for me at least, and this is all a matter of taste, obviously, the car did not have a bad angle. It did. There was no direction you could look at this car from and not just think, wow. Like, yeah, it's such a beautiful car. From every angle, I was stoked. And even with the wing, you know, my personal preference has always been a Touring. But again, I looked at it with the wing and I was like, hell yeah, the wing looks great. It looks really beautifully integrated. That swan neck design, the material, just the craftsmanship of it. It's so good. It is. It's so, so good. And yeah.
So Will's found himself a bunch of new friends now.
Shit, Will, come and play. But he's, you know, he drives it too. And that's one of the great things, you know. He's not got it. He said to me when I was first chatting with him and talking about the spec, he said, I got it to drive it. So he took himself over to Tasmania, kind of tracked down all of the Targa Tasmania stages and drove them in his GT3. He's taken it to the track. So he's not, he's driving the hell out of this thing. And fair play to him. And it's a great, I just think he's chosen his specs so, so well. Very, very jealous.
Yeah, that color combo with the wheels, that just, I think you sent me a shot of it, or I configured it over the weekend myself. I can't remember which, but probably both. Looks really, really good.
Yeah, it is. It's a special one.
So what have we got coming up then, Andy? What's going on with you before we wrap up this pod for another week?
Yeah, so we're going to take a little break. We've got Easter here. I'm heading away. This is going to be fun, actually. So I'm going away with the family, but my son and I are leaving a day early and driving a route which I'd been wanting to drive to Recce for a future rally and haven't had the opportunity to do yet. So we're going to drive that and then drive what is the equivalent of day two of the Alpine Range Rally. So up over Mount Hotham and then meet my wife and daughter in Bright. So I'm super excited for that. That's gonna be great. And I think this Recce run that we're gonna do, I think there's some really spectacular roads on that too. So that'll be great. And then as soon as I'm back, 9:30 video, a couple of other videos that I can't talk about yet, but coming up.
Oh, don't tease us like that, Andy.
Indeed I will. Indeed I will. I can't give it all away all at once. And what about you, my man?
Well, you can save that for the next episode of the Last Ras podcast, I guess. What have I got going on? I've just got to get the 996 ready for the Rockies. So I'm going to be doing the control arms. I'm going to do the brakes. I'm going to do the sway bar bushings. I think that's probably about it. But it's going to be like, I'm going to have several DIY videos coming out soon. Oh, and I'm in the middle actually of putting together a video for my friend Chris, who's just finished a bunch of exterior mods on his turbo.
I saw some footage of that. Looks amazing. Looks amazing.
Oh God, he's got that thing dialed in so well. It's looking absolutely phenomenal. And there's more to come on that. So yeah, I'm going to be doing playing around with those videos over the next few weeks. But yeah, I've just got to get ready for the rock. Well, enjoy your Easter, my man.
I will. You too. And to all of our listeners, thank you so much. We're having a couple of weeks off just to regroup. As you may have guessed, there's some tension between me and James, some unfinished, unresolved issues. So we're going to do some therapy. We each need to go away and work on ourselves, I think, first. I think that's clear. And then we'll spend some time working through these issues together and see if we can't resolve them. And there are some issues around trust, some stuff to solve.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. You can catch Andy at The Last Rasp, and you can catch me, James, at Auto Amateur. Thanks for dialing in, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
See you guys.